Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
My opening serve is Australian Open Tennis. It's been 8 years, but Serena Williams and Venus Williams have set up another all-Williams sisters Grand Slam final in Melbourne. Serena needed only 50 minutes Thursday to beat Croatia's Mirjana Lucic-Baroni 6-2 and 6-1 to move within one victory of a record 23rd major singles title, the most by any player, male or female, in the modern Open era. Earlier Thursday, Serena's older sister, Venus Williams, reached the final with a three-sets victory over American countrywoman Coco Vandeweghe. The final score from Melbourne, 6-7, 6-2, and 6-3. At 36, Venus is the oldest finalist at the Australian Open in the modern era. Meanwhile, after her semifinal victory, 35-year-old Serena Williams did an on-court interview and talked about meeting Venus again for a Grand Slam trophy.
She's basically my world and my life, so she means everything to me, and I was so happy for her, obviously, and I just couldn't be happier for the results and for us both to be in the final is the biggest dream come true for us.
Another dream come true for the Williams sisters. They'll contest their first Grand Slam final since Wimbledon in 2009, when Serena won in two sets. In addition to that record 23rd Grand Slam singles title, Serena Williams is bidding for her seventh Australian Open championship. Venus Williams has won seven Grand Slam singles titles, with her last major win coming at Wimbledon in 2008. Venus has never won the women's singles title at the Australian Open. This marks the second time she's advanced to the final, after also doing so in 2003. Meanwhile, this is also proving to be a memorable Australian Open for 35-year-old Roger Federer. After a six-month injury layoff, the Swiss star has moved within one victory of his record-extending 18th career Grand Slam singles title, the most by any male player. Federer defeated his Swiss countryman Stan Wawrinka in a classic five-set semifinal match on Thursday. The final score from Melbourne, 7-5, 6-3, 1-6, 4-6, and 6-3. Federer will play the winner of the second semifinal between Spanish star Rafael Nadal and Bulgaria's Grigor Dimitrov. I mentioned 36-year-old Venus Williams being the oldest finalist at the Australian Open in the modern era. Well, here's another Australian Open fun fact for our VOA tennis fans. 35-year-old Roger Federer is the oldest man to reach a Grand Slam singles final since the Australian Ken Rosewall, then 39 years old, advanced to the final at the 1974 U.S. Open. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
The field is now set for the quarterfinals at the 31st Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Gabon. Let's take a quick look at the matchups on Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday, the Stallions of Burkina Faso take on the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia in Gabon's capital, Libreville. That same day, in a battle of the Lions of Teranga from Senegal will play the indomitable Lions from Cameroon in Gabon's southeastern city of Franceville. On Sunday, Ghana will play the Democratic Republic of Congo in the northern town of Oyem. And also Sunday, in an all-North African quarterfinal, Morocco will meet Egypt in the western coastal city of Port-Gentil. The Pharaohs of Egypt, winners of a record 7 Nations Cup titles, clinched the last quarterfinal berth Wednesday with a 1-0 victory over Ghana in Port-Gentil. Mohamed Salah scored for the Egyptians in the 11th minute. Egypt won Group D with 7 points from 3 matches, while Ghana was second with 6 points. In the other group match Wednesday, played in Oyem, Uganda and Mali drew 1-1. It was the first point for the Cranes of Uganda, while Mali finished the tournament with 2 points. The Ugandans were playing in the Nations Cup for the first time since 1978. Let's listen in now to what Uganda's Serbian head coach, Milutin Misho Sredojevic, had to say at the post-match news conference.
I would just say that we had an 3 matches after 39 years, we have shown in first and second match against the teams that have been 7 and 4 times champions of Africa. We have shown that this group has been the toughest group for competition. Even match Egypt beating Ghana 1-0 has shown that only one detail decide. We have been a very tough group against. Today we played against the team of Mali that has in last 3 editions of Africa Cup of Nations being 2 times third. They are champions in under 17, they are third in the world in under 20. They are a great team coached by my dear colleague, and I would say that we gave everything what we could and can under very difficult conditions of today's play surface that has not favored the game of football. It was more for the water polo. In the same moment, I would say that head is too much hot in order to speak about 2019. But one thing is for sure, we have done an amazing job after 39 years to come and to play with 2 former champions for 1 ball against great team of Mali, being a chance to win, scoring goal after 39 years, getting first point after 39 years. We have moved ourselves to the next football level that we can play against any team in Africa at the highest possible level.
That's Milutin Misho Sredojevic, the head coach of Uganda's Nations Cup football team. And Coach Misho was speaking in Oyem, Gabon. It's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sonny.
Nnamdi, let's begin with Joseph King Kong Agbeko, Ghana's 2-time former world bantamweight champion. He's scheduled to get back in the ring February 4th for a big comeback fight.
VOA!
Tell our VOA boxing fans about that.
Sonny, this is a very big fight for King Kong Agbeko because he's fighting Kid Galahad, Barry Awad, for a featherweight fight. Kid Galahad is from Sheffield, England, so he's got home advantage. But we have to look at his resume and look at who he fought in the past compared to what Agbeko did in the past, too. So I think Agbeko stands a very good chance of pulling an upset. Not only that, Kid Galahad tested positive for banned substance in 2014. So he's just coming off a six-month suspension.
We haven't talked much about King Kong past few years. Can this get him back in the title picture?
Sonny, all he needs to do is go to London, destroy this kid in front of his own people, and he's back in the mix. The featherweight is a very big division right now. In terms of money, this division, the featherweight division, brings in big, big numbers.
Let's stay with the African fighters, Namdi. Julius Ndongo from Namibia. He was named the Sunny Side of Sports African Fighter of the Year for 2016. Nicknamed the Blue Machine. He's going to fight again on April 15th in Glasgow, Scotland. How about some details?
This is a unification bout for the Blue Machine. Ricky Barnes is from Glasgow, Scotland. He's bringing his WBA belt, and Ndongo is bringing his IBF belt. We're looking at a unification. Ricky Barnes is so big in Scotland because he's a three-weight world champion. He packs the arena. But what I like about Ndongo, because Ndongo is big, tall, rangy southpaw with power. He can knock you out with one punch like he did in Moscow against the champion. So Ndongo and Ricky Barnes, it's a big fight. And that's going to be Glasgow, April 15th. Action fight and money fight for the Africans, Sonny.
Namdi, a heavyweight with ties to Nigeria. He's going to be on the undercard of Deontay Wilder next month. What's going on there?
Sonny, I'm very excited about this fight because this is the Nigerian heavyweight born in Poland by Nigerian parents. His name is Izuagbe Ugonna, 17-0 with 14 huge knockouts. First fight in the U.S. on television on Fox TV, and he's taking on Dominic Brazil, who is a well-known fighter in the U.S. Remember, Brazil went to the U.K. and lost to Anthony Joshua. So we'll have to gauge and see what Izu can do to Brazil. If Izu blows out Brazil on live television, he's in there for big money fights.
What about Deontay Wilder, Namdi? I heard he's having some problems with getting an opponent.
Might have to go to the graveyard, Sonny. I keep digging up these bombs, Sonny. Well, you know, he was scheduled to fight Andrzej Wawrzyk from Poland on February 25th in Alabama. Andre tested positive for the anabolic steroid. WBC tested him January 15th and 16th, and he tested positive.
Namdi, hasn't Wilder had problems in the past with opponents who tested positive?
You're right, Sonny. This is the second time in a row Wilder's opponent failed a drug test. The first one was Alexander Povkin from Russia. 2 weeks before the fight, he tested positive and the fight was called off. It just baffles my mind that these European heavyweights, they're Jews a lot, man. These guys, they're Jews and they get busted, you know. So they should know better than that, because right now WBC has this mandatory drug test program that you can get caught anytime. So these European heavyweights must stay off the Jews.
Namdi, let's stick with the heavyweights. April 29th at Wembley Stadium, arguably the biggest fight of 2017. Anthony Joshua versus Vladimir Klitschko. What's the latest on Joshua Klitschko?
Sonny, remember the last time we talked about the tickets? The second batch of tickets went on sale. What we have right now, 80,000 seats sold out at Wembley. They're putting in another 10,000, which means 90,000 sold out. That will generate close to $20 million live gate. That's the biggest fight in Europe.
Now, I know Joshua has been fighting a lot in the London area, Namdi. Will Klitschko have any crowd support on April 29th?
Well, Klitschko has this big draw from Germany because of German television, and most of their fights were held in Germany. And you know, with Europe, you know, you can jump on the train from Berlin or Hamburg, anywhere. You get to the UK, and then it's going to be a huge, huge crowd. And you have fans coming from Russia, from the Ukraine, from Germany. So it's not just going to be only English fans, but majority of that 90,000 will be English fans.
And when will Joshua and Klitschko get into serious training mode, Namdi?
Oh, Sonny, they've already started training because, I mean, this is a major fight. You don't just start training 2-3 weeks before the fight. You must work on things in camp. Like, you know, with Klitschko, you know, it's going to be this jab and grab style where he can lean over you, catch you, lock up your arms. If you don't train on how to nullify that jab and grab in camp, then the fight night, you look real stupid, you know. So they are in camp working on jab and grab, working on breaking up the clutch and all that. Then come fight night, he'll be ready to go. Mind you, January is over now. We're already almost in February. Before you know it, April rolls in. April 29 is showtime.
1 week before Joshua Klitschko on April 22nd, Manny Pacquiao scheduled to get back in the ring, Namdi. Tell our VOA listeners about that.
Sonny, they call this a world tour. He's fighting a guy from Australia called Jeff Horn. And then even Manny Pacquiao said, I don't know who is Jeff Horn. The promoter calls it a world tour, but the fight fans call it a wheelchair tour. Who is Jeff Horn? Why should we pay to see you fight Jeff Horn?
Well, why is Pacquiao fighting this Jeff Horn, Namdi?
Manny Pacquiao needs to stay busy. He's a senator, but he wants to collect that money that comes from boxing. Because with the fight game, he stands a chance of picking up $10 to $20 million per fight.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta. And we'll hear more hard-hitting verbal jabs from Namdi during Friday's Sunny Side of Sports. Joining us once again for a look at sports social media trends is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard. Sporty greetings, Doug.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. I hope one day I can actually be a reigning prince of something. I have to work at it a little harder.
Well, you're honorary royalty right now, Doug. What's trending in the sports
world? Well, here we go. After a week of talking about this, we're heading into the finals at the Australian Open. Things are almost set. So first today, Roger Federer beat his fellow Swiss and good friend, apparently. They're good friends off the court, Stan Wawrinka. But it was a close one. 5 sets, 7-5, 6-3, 1-6, 4-6, 6-3. So this one was a teeter right to the very end. So that means Federer is going to the final, and he is on course for possibly his 18th Grand Slam title.
Incredible.
Amazing, amazing. this is a real major comeback for Federer. He was off for 6 months. He did not go to the Olympics in 2016. He's had this nagging knee problem, maybe some other issues that come with, you know, gosh, being 35, 36 years old, a grand old man, I suppose. He is now the second oldest man in the modern era to reach a Grand Slam. The oldest was Ken Rosewell in 1974. He was 39. I don't think we're going to be seeing a lot of that in this.
I don't either.
In this new era anymore. But it's great to see him. And it's just, you know, some really great tennis right up to the end there. Afterwards, Federer saying, quote, telling the press, quote, I couldn't be happier right now. I felt like everything happened so quickly at the end. I had to check the score. So there you go. Now, we don't know who he's going to be facing. It might be Rafael Nadal, who has been, he's, I think, still the number 9 seed. He is facing, and Nadal is facing Grigor Dimitrov tomorrow, Friday.
Okay.
So the winner of that match will be the one to face down Federer in the finals. And, you know, I'll just throw it out there, not to just pick on Roger Federer. You know, Nadal isn't all that young himself. He's 30 years old.
Mm.
Now, that's a big difference to 35 or 39, I suppose.
But in tennis years, that's old, though.
Exactly. And in so many sports, we're seeing this increasingly. As the level of competition and play improves, you know, just every tiny bit counts. So anyway, fun to see, especially for an old guy like me. Things are obviously much clearer on the women's final, and what a final this is going to be. The Williams sisters are going to be facing off against one another, Venus versus Serena. They have met 27 times before on the court. That includes 8 Grand Slam tourneys. Serena leads that count by 6-2. And their last face-off was in Wimbledon in 2009. That was a time when heavens, Barack Obama was still president. So now on Venus' side, you know, she's check this out. I did not know this. She is the all-time leader in Grand Slams played at 73. That's for men or women, all time. So really just sort of an amazing career she's had. She's a bit older than Serena. She's 36. She's larger. She's taller. She's about 6'1", 6'2". Venus' side, she's a little shorter. She's a year younger. But I think she makes up for some of those deficits in strength. Serena is clearly, you know, a strong player. She has 22 Grand Slam titles. That puts her in the modern era ranks at number two. And if she wins in Melbourne, as we've said, this will be 23, and that will be a world record for her.
You know, Doug, they talk about changing of the guard in sports, but at least at this Australian Open, you've got 36-year-old Venus Williams, 35-year-old Serena Williams, 35-year-old Roger Federer. They don't want to go anywhere right now.
No, we've been watching them. And, you know, we've seen other people, Djokovic and others, you know, kind of bubbling up. But it's just, it's really great to see, you know, this level of play by people who are as seasoned as they are.
And maybe part of it is they're taking better care of themselves in terms of conditioning and,
you know,
fitness.
I imagine that's part of it. You would probably know better than I. But just in terms of what we see professional sports athletes, their training regimens now are so scientific and precise and tailored for them. You know, it's not just like go into the gym and, you know, whack the ball around for an hour or two. They're so, you know, in the top of their form. So maybe that, I think, probably has a role to play as well.
Doug, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What else is trending, Doug?
Two quick items for you. You know, ordinarily, a soccer game between Brazil and Colombia, as we had yesterday, would not be making big news. But this was no ordinary game. This was the one that had previously been scheduled 2 months ago, before that horrible plane crash that killed 71 members, players, officials, journalists, Flight 2933 that occurred down in South America. The two teams met again. Brazil won, but it wasn't really so much about the play. It really was about, I think, it was just an emotional game for everybody. The reports coming out of there was that both teams, both sides, all the fans in the stadium were really focused on sort of the emotional import of the moment. Really a brilliant moment down in sport down there. Very quickly, one last item. This is making a lot of rounds on social media. So now, quickly, you may have heard that President Trump is saying that he believes 3 to 5 million votes were illegally cast. And, you know, now news is coming of his evidence. Mr. Trump said that professional golfer Bernhard Lonker related the following to him. He was in line to vote. He was turned away. Three or four other people were in line, and they were allowed to cast provisional ballots. And Mr. Trump relates, quote, these people looked like they shouldn't have been able to vote. We don't know what that means. Now, it turns out that they were, but Langer wasn't. He's a German citizen. He has no voting rights in the United States, and hence the hashtag Langer is popping up all over social media. Not very nice comments about Mr. Trump, and I think Mr. Langer himself, who has not posted, I think he's just kind of regretting having been inserted into all of this.
Thanks, Doug.
You bet.
I guess Bernhard Langer, as you said, maybe he shouldn't have stood in that line, Doug.
Maybe he shouldn't have been trying to vote.
Thanks, Doug. Thank VOA's you. Doug Bernard speaking with us here in Studio 22. And that wraps up the January 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I want to thank my producer this evening, Kwame Ofori. Kwame, just back from abroad, the motherland, Ghana. Ghana. Yes, he's back from Ghana. Thanks also to Voice of America engineer Rob McLean. Thank you, Rob. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. We'll be right back. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After 22 years of autocratic rule under former President Yahya Jammeh, the Gambia has a new president, Adama Barrow. President Barrow's inauguration took place on January 18th at the Gambian embassy in Dakar, Senegal, due to concerns about his safety in Gambia. After initially accepting his electoral defeat in early December, Mr. Jammeh suddenly changed course, refusing to step down. He then attempted to challenge the election results in court, and when that failed, declared a state of emergency. The Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, immediately condemned the attempt by Jammeh to cling to power. Following weeks of high-level engagement by ECOWAS and other regional heads of state, the group underlined their commitment to Gambian democracy by organizing a multinational mission to enforce Gambia's electoral results should Mr. Jammeh continue to refuse to hand over power. Following the stationing of these forces on the Gambian border and intense last-minute mediation by regional leaders, Mr. Jammeh finally agreed to depart peacefully on January 21st. This has paved the way for President Barrow to return to the Gambia imminently. The United States welcomes the ongoing peaceful transition of power in the Gambia and congratulates President Barrow on his inauguration. Mr. Jammeh took office in 1994 after a coup and imprisoned numerous journalists and political opponents during his tenure. President Barrow has vowed to release all political prisoners and to get to work on improving the Gambia's economy. The United States applauds the commitment to democracy and the restraint shown by the Gambian people over the past weeks and appreciates the decision by Mr. Jammeh to depart peacefully. The United States commends the Economic Community of West African States and other regional partners for their leadership in addressing the situation. The United States echoes President Barrow's call for Gambians to unite and work together as brothers and sisters for the future of the Gambia. The United States is proud of our close ties to the people of the Gambia and looks forward to working closely with President Barrow and his team to achieve the aspirations of all Gambians.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports.
My name is Edward Ameyibo. I listen to Daybreak Africa to be abreast with developments on the continent. I encourage you to do the same.
You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on The Voice of America.